All right, welcome into the Trailblazers.com podcast for June 24th, day before the draft right here at the Rose Garden. I'm Gavin Dawson from 95.5 The Game in studio with Casey Holdall, Trailblazers.com. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Gavin. Just preparing for this draft and trying to get ready to leave the country here in another two or three days. So
yeah,
what's going on?
Yeah, well, I can't wait to talk about Spain and the Rudy camp and everything. That sounds like a lot of fun for you. But joining us on the telephone here on the day before the draft is Dave from BlazersEdge.com. How you doing, Dave? Good morning.
I'm kind of nonplussed, I suppose. I mean, this is our first draft without a huge pick, at least in hand, going into the draft. So, I don't know. I'm feeling mixed feelings. On the one hand, I'm still excited for tomorrow. On the other hand, you know, I really think it'll probably be kind of a quiet day. And so I'm not, you know, it's like that Christmas when you know you're not going to get the present you want. You know, it's still fun, but
What is the present you want?
I don't know. A championship ring is the only thing that'll do now. I'm the guy who's got everything he wanted out of his Blazers. So what do you get for the guy who has everything besides a title?
Good question. The closer we get to this draft, guys, it's becoming, there's an anticlimactic feel, right? Leading into last year's draft, it seemed like the possibilities were just endless for what Kevin Pritchard and the Blazers could do, but there's nothing with teeth to it. I mean, you've all been around long enough that you can look at reports online or rumors and see speculation and differentiate quickly the difference between something that's credible and has legs to it and something that's just being discussed. You know, and I haven't seen anything yet of substance regarding the Portland Trailblazers in a possible trade, although we do really expect the phone lines and the BlackBerry batteries to be getting burnt up pretty sufficiently here over the next 24 hours.
Yeah, I completely agree. It doesn't seem like there's anything this year where, you know, it really seems like there's a big likelihood of something happening. Then again, I will say in years past, I've kind of felt the same way. I remember before the Zach Randolph-Channing Frye trade, that came up, I think, the morning of the draft. I saw it, and I was like, there's no way that's going to happen. And then it happens. You know, last year, I don't think anyone expected the Trailblazers to trade for Jared Bayless. I mean, that just came out of nowhere. So while I agree that I don't really feel like anything of substance is really going to happen tomorrow on draft day, I entirely wouldn't be surprised if it did. But it seems like, you know, the other chips are starting to fall with other teams now, and it doesn't seem like the Trailblazers really have their hands in that pot right now.
How about you, Dave?
It's a matter of ammunition. I mean, the Zach trade, yeah, I think we saw Zach being traded coming. We didn't know it was going to be to New York, but you knew he was going to be gone that summer. And you also had other higher picks to work with that year. Last year you at least had the number, 13? So, you know, you were around the spot where you could envision moving up into something exciting. I just don't know that the Blazers have the ammunition this year that they're willing to part with in order to make a significant move. I can easily see them, again, moving up into the middle of the round, but then you got to be real sure that the guy you want is there and that he's going to make an impact, because you're trading a player who's actually playing, getting playing time in order to make that move. But, you know, that I think that's possible. I just don't see them moving way up. I think the risk is greater or outweighs the reward there, especially considering who you'd have to move to get there.
Yeah, I think they move out or you know, they move their pick more likely to, you know, 24th overall, and for a package involving a veteran. You know, I couldn't see them moving up for a big-time asset in this draft. That, to me, just does not make any sense right now. Unless Ricky Rubio goes on a fall to, like, 7 or 8, and there's a team out there just begging, and the Blazers jump on something that they, you know, they really like, and they're like, okay, we'll go long-term with this kid because we really believe in him. But I don't know how much they do or don't believe in him, for that matter. But I think the key word to keep in mind here in thinking about what they're going to do over the next 2 weeks when you include free agency is the timeline. You know, and several team officials lately have, you know, insinuated or indicated that now is the time, in Paul Allen's words, to go for it. And I don't think there's any other 54-win teams out there that are lining up trying to get 18, 19, 20-year-olds, right? They're getting cast between the ages of 27 and 31. And because of that, and because of what I saw in round one against the Houston Rockets, I got to believe something over the next 2 weeks is going to bring in a Richard Jefferson caliber player. And what I mean by caliber player is as impactful. I don't think what RJ would bring to the Trailblazers would necessarily work. I think it's great for San Antonio. But I would expect something of that. I mean, okay, Pau Gasol has gone to the Lakers. That now the Spurs add Richard Jefferson, who's going to give them a really nice fourth player to go on that roster. Where is the Blazers' third or fourth player, and when is it coming? I would anticipate it's coming in the next couple of weeks, right? That's what that's something we talked about this morning a lot on the MSP.
Yeah, you would think that it would be coming sometime this summer. I don't really see how it comes tomorrow, for one, because I don't think there's anyone in this draft who is attainable, who fills that role. And I think, yeah, just from the timeline standpoint of when you can and can't trade players, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime before, I think, whatever the July 10th allowances for when players can be traded and whatnot. And
well, Mike Miller and Randy Foy got moved.
Right,
yesterday.
Right. And I'm not exactly sure how all that works. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like we're in that situation right now. Dave might be able to speak to that, actually. I don't know. Maybe not, but Dave always
there
seems to know more
than I do. There are a couple
possibilities.
I mean, Travis Outlaw and Steve Blake are still open issues because they have the kind of contract that you can move that are, you know, valuable because they can still be cut by the other team. I'm not saying Travis and Steve aren't valuable as players. I'm saying they're cap allowance players right now in a way that other players aren't. So, I mean, that's still an open issue. The Blazers have said they're not interested kind of in moving them much, but you never know until it happens. So, I mean, there's possibility of a trade going down on draft day involving veterans, but that's the only way the Blazers are going to improve for the coming year through this draft. I can't think of a single person, even Blake Griffin. I mean, come on, where are you going to play him? Unless you move LaMarcus to get him, how much impact is he really going to make? And that's the consensus number one player in this draft. He's not going to make that much of a difference, let alone anyone who comes after him. I mean, right now, we're looking at a good move, you know, envision good move, perhaps being trading up for a guy like Ty Lawson or Dwan Blair, who are going to be probably nice backups. I mean, that's the reality of this draft.
So what'd you make of those comments yesterday by Ty Lawson, you know, indicating that his agent had told him the Blazers like him and were possibly thinking about moving up, and even said Nate McMillan told him that the Blazers like him? You know, we talked about it last week, but, you know, I really think Ty Lawson would step in and be a backup point guard behind Steve Blake. But I think you made a good point that probably doesn't make you a 55 or 56 win team next year. I mean, net change would be very minimal, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I believe his comments 100%. In fact, you know, we should give credit to, again, my co-writer Ben Golver gets mentioned twice in two podcasts. Wow. But he had called something like this real early. And then the more I you know, read about and saw of Lawson, the more it crystallized that this guy was probably either going to be the guy or be the type of guy that the Blazers went for. In fact, at this point, you know, I'm almost willing to call it and saying if the Blazers don't move out of the draft, I'm thinking Lawson is by far the running away candidate to be our draft pick. And the reason is because he kind of has a Brandon Roy-esque quality in terms of people think that he's going to reach his limit fairly soon in the league, but he has that kind of skills and mentality where he can perhaps bust beyond what people perceive as his limit and contribute more than what they anticipate he will. Just like Brandon did, you know, he was ready for the NBA when he came out. That was the tag. Good player, probably going to peak in his second year. Obviously, that didn't happen. I think the Blazers could be interested in a guy who's ready to play now, but also maybe has the potential to move beyond that.
I think Ty Lawson reminds me a lot of Jameer Nelson, who you remember won College Player of the Year and was all that and a bag of chips at St. Joe's. He falls down to, I believe it was right around 24, where Orlando ultimately ended up getting him, which is a fantastic bargain, obviously. So there are players to get in those 20s.
Yeah, I did want to jump in here for a second. As far as Ty Lawson goes, I think that they probably do like him. But then, you know, what does that mean for Jared Bayless? How does that really work out? Do you move up to take a guy? I guess it really depends on, do you think that they like Ty Lawson more than they like Jared Bayless at this point?
I think he's a lot more prepared to run a team.
I mean, obviously, he's what, 2 years older? He's got three more years of college experience. So, I mean, that's possible, I guess. But then, I mean, so then do you move Bayless in a trade? Bayless, a guy who, if he was being taken this year, would probably be a top five pick?
Let me preface it by saying I'm not a big Jared Bayless believer.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand other people believe that, you know, Jared Bayless with time is going to be, starting caliber. I don't know. I think with the way he plays that, at least on this Blazers basketball team, it would be hard to imagine him, a ball dominator, attacker, attack the rim, let me break down the D with off the dribble. And he's amazing at doing that. He's great at doing that. But I don't know if that can be the starter in Portland. Maybe he needs the ball in his hands too much. I think Ty Lawson gets the outlet pass and runs it right up the defense's backside and either makes a great pass or pulls up for three, which he's really adept at shooting now, unlike after his sophomore year, or gets all the way to the hoop. I just think Ty Lawson is a better fit.
Here's the deal. The Blazers are going to carry three guards, and Sergio is probably not in the picture. I think that's, a consensus. And, Blake may well be traded before the summer is over. So if you're looking at a guard rotation of, let's just throw one out there. Let's say Heinrich and Bayless and Lawson. You're comfortable with Lawson, whether he's your second guard or your third guard as a rookie. And he brings a different look than Sergio did and a different look than Bayless does. So it's not like they're exactly apples to apples right there in your reserve guards. And I think the Blazers would be comfortable with that and comfortable saying, hey, Jared, if you can beat this guy out, more power to you. We have no problem with him riding the pines. If you can't, well, then we've got a well-rounded guard coming off the bench behind whoever our starter is.
I guess for me it becomes an issue of, is that asset maximization if you have, if you're moving up in the draft, which is going to cost you something, do you feel good about doing that to get your third point guard off the bench? I mean,
no.
I wouldn't either. That's why, I like Ty Lawson. I like his game. But, when you talk about moving up to get him at that point, it's like, well,
would the 24th overall pick and $3 million do it? Would 24th overall pick and Sergio do it? Then I would feel okay.
Well, yeah. So
I think it's more likely that you get the trade exception. Or just buy it outright.
You got to figure. I mean, obviously, this would be a trade that would go down right at the very last second because you'd have to know where Lawson was at. But let's say he's top 15. So you think one of those teams in the top 15 in the latter part of that lottery, they're going to take a trade exception and the 24th pick for the 15th pick. Does that seem reasonable? I'm asking because I'm not sure. To me, it seems a little. The cost savings between the 15th pick and the 24th pick. I'm not sure what it is. I don't have the rookie scale in front of me here, but it can't be a ton, I guess. Or the life of a contract, it's probably $2 or $3 million. But as far as like a yearly cap space issue, it doesn't seem like it would be all that much. So basically, is another team going to trade that pick to us for basically a worst pick and, an exception?
You keep reading that the money situation is so bad. I'll make it quick, Dave. You keep reading that the money situation is so bad with some of these teams that maybe there is. I think we're going to know a lot more about the financial health of all of the NBA's partnering owners, tomorrow night.
Yeah, Casey's hit on a key point, I think, is that it's not so much how much the Blazers value Lawson, but how much everybody else does. If he's going to be picked at, say, 12 or 13, I don't think the Blazers can go get him because you're not going to trade a Travis Outlaw to get up there and get him. But let's say he slips down to one of those middle picks, I don't know, about 15, but, 16, 17, Minnesota, somewhere in there, that kind of thing, I don't know. I think that's certainly possible. I think that there will be teams that will be looking to get rid of those guaranteed contracts because the guys they hoped were there are not. And I think that's more true in this draft than in any other. And I think Kevin Pritchard would trade that $3 million exception to buy another, pick? Yeah, I believe that's possible. Do I believe Paul Allen would spend $3 million outright to get a pick? Yeah, I think that's possible. Do I think Sergio could be part of a deal like that? Yeah, that's possible. I agree that they're not trading one of their rotation players to get him. But, they'll take a look, and I think they'd have no problem. Even if they project him being the third point guard this year, they'd have no problem banking on his future and having him as an insurance policy.
What do you guys think the chances are that after the draft and after free agency, there is no major change to this roster, that Kevin Pritchard just decided to not send away any of his young assets. They really love their young players, you know, and they're willing to stick by him. And ultimately, it's going to pay huge dividends with some of these guys. But, you know, they didn't really move Jarrett Jack until they'd seen him for, what, three seasons and were very convinced that he wasn't the guy that they wanted in that role. And they could have moved Travis Outlaw, but they stuck again with their young guy because they didn't really want to go into the unknown world and really take that risk. You know what I mean? And to the point that maybe it cost him a really good chance at Devin Harris for not very much. But what do you think the odds are that in a couple of weeks this roster is for the most part the same, except for maybe a backup point guard and a backup power forward?
I think it's pretty slim. I think a move for a rotation player will probably be made. And I think the reason why is because I think, you know, during last season, you know, they were on this run. They didn't really want to rejigger the chemistry or chance, you know, a change in the roster that might be detrimental. And on top of that, you know, they were still, you're still figuring out what you have in, I mean, to a lesser extent, LaMarcus Aldridge and Brandon Roy. So I think now they know who those guys are, what they're capable of. And I think at this point now, they probably feel a little better about, you know, stretching out a little bit and making some moves that maybe last year they wouldn't have. And also, I want to mention Nicholas Batum in that as well. Knowing what you have in Nicholas and knowing that he is, as of right now, a capable NBA player and hopefully an improving NBA player, I think that also allows them to make some moves that they might have been hesitant to make at the beginning of last season and during last season as well, before the trade deadline. So I would be surprised if everything was the same, even in regards to the rotation players, in another couple weeks. Then again, I think it's also possible maybe they roll with it into the start of next season and then maybe make a deal, you know, in the first month of the season, like we saw last year with, you know, Chauncey Billups or Allen Iverson. I don't think it would be anything that big, but I think there's still a possibility that they go through the summer with these guys, wait to see maybe how things shake out at the start of the regular season, and then make their move then.
I think that I'll be stronger than that. I think that if it doesn't have to happen in the next 2 weeks, but if we're looking in November, December at the same lineup, something fell through. Some plan didn't work. And I'll tell you why, because at the minimum, you can't play all of those small forwards who all need playing time and are all promising. The point guard situation is just a mess. I mean, that's all there is to it. You got three guys who can play, none of whom completely fulfill what you need. The Blazers have to make a move this summer if there's anything available that they like, and I don't think they'll hesitate to do so. The only scenario I see in which they don't make a move is if they know Martell Webster is just not going to be able to play this year and they need, you know, Outlaw and Batum and can't get a small forward that they think fits in with Batum's growth development. That's the only scenario I see in which they don't move.
Who's the players that go, though, then? I mean, it seems like there's a couple of things at work. Number one, the Blazers have a lot of value on their young players and have been resistant towards moving them. Number two, they're not getting the slam dunk offer that San Antonio got, you know, involving Richard Jefferson. They're not getting that offer that Washington got, where they fifth overall pick and a bunch of garbage for Randy Foy and Mike Miller. They're not getting the Pau Gasol offer either. You know what I mean? So it's like they have a high value on their players, and it's probably disproportionate to what other teams are offering them for those same guys. So who are the dudes? You know, Travis Outlaw. They'll say, oh, he's Mr. Fourth Quarter, man. This guy hits shots. He can get his shot. If Brandon Roy's having a tough night or they're double-teaming the crap out of him, we can give it to Trav. We can't give up on Trav. He can go to the 3-4. Steve Blake, you know, this guy's committed, you know, to the product. He is a trailblazer. Martell Webster, he just signed a new contract. Can you move him? Does somebody want to take a risk on 4 years and 16 mil for a guy with an iffy foot? Nobody's really all that sure that he's going to play next year. Batum, you don't want to move. And then you get to Rudy Fernandez. Rudy's going to be great. Can't move Rudy. You can't move Jared Bayless either. Have you seen this guy when he gets going to the rim? Just give him a couple years to mature. Can't move him. We will give you Sergio Rodriguez and Channing Frye right now for David Lee. Come on. I mean, seriously, you see that stuff at Blazers Edge. You see it at trailblazers.com. I hear it all the time, and it's filling my inbox. It's like nobody wants to give up anybody worth anything from this team. They want to give Portland's crap for the answers to our starting small forward and point guard situation. So, You know, and it seems like almost like Kevin Pritchard and his guys could be some of those guys that are just not willing to give up the kind of players that are going to bring back the kind of players you need to take the next step.
Yeah. Well, I'll say a couple of things there. One, you know, no one wanted to trade Clyde Drexler either, but they traded him. You know, I mean, yeah. Maybe one of the most beloved.
That was a gift
wrap. One of the most beloved players in Portland history, if not the most beloved. And, you know, they did what they thought was best for the franchise and what was best for Clyde, and they moved him. And I'm sure, you know, people didn't want to see that happen, but, you know, it happened. So what the fans think and, you know, what the front office thinks, two different things, obviously. The other thing, I don't really know that I want to hypothesize about which players would be involved, but I will say that, you know, when they're your players, obviously you have an interest in talking them up. You know, you're not going to badmouth your players and say, you know, yeah, we should trade this guy because, you know, he can't play this position or he can't dribble or, you know, he can't get it done in the clutch. You don't say those things because assuming that at some time you do want to trade those guys, you don't want that coming back and biting you in the ass when another GM you're dealing with says, well, hey, I thought you said that, you know, this guy couldn't play and now you're trying to offer him up to me. You know, what's the deal? So I mean, you know, there's always going to be some subterfuge when you're talking about the NBA and trades and, you know, I think we've learned that throughout the course of, you know, of Kevin Pritchard's career that, you know, people, you know, they overvalue players. That's true. But they also do it for a reason.
I like it.
Yeah, there are a couple of things going on here, I think. I think you're correct in our players being overvalued from the home perspective. I don't think Travis Outlaw and Steve Blake, aside from their contract situation, actually draw that much bona fide talent unless another team is really motivated to sell. But I think in some ways the Blazers are also a victim of their own success in that we've heard for years and we continue to hear in every trade rumor seemingly that comes out that the Blazers have a stockpile of young talent and contracts that are available and attractive and all this stuff, which makes them seem like the rich kids on the block. Now, when you're getting ready to sell, you know, when you're in your store, if you see a guy that's kind of humble, you know, shabbily dressed come in and use a coupon, you're happy to see him and you say, yeah, you know, I'm good to sell to you. If you see Bill Gates come in and try to nickel and dime you with a, you know, 50-cent coupon, you're kind of upset. And I think the Blazers kind of have that reputation around the league as being the guys with everything going for them. And so you're going to charge them a premium. I mean, it's just human. And you're not going to want to be seen as being taken by them, and you're not going to want to be seen as contributing to their further wealth. So I think the Blazers may have a hard time swinging the kind of deals that fans want in the same way they could when they were kind of under the radar in a 20-win team.
Yeah. But it's okay to send players to L.A. or San Antonio, but not Portland? You think that letter that went out to all the GMs might be an aggravating factor as well?
It's possible. I doubt that that would linger. But really, you have to look at the exact players that were traded in these situations, too. I mean, Pau Gasol, Richard Jefferson, those are specific players whom the Blazers probably didn't have a ton of interest in and didn't want to give up whatever resources were required to get them. Just because Pau Gasol and Richard Jefferson were available and traded doesn't mean that every player of that caliber or ilk is available for the Blazers to choose from. It only comes at specific time with specific players, and if that player doesn't fit, you can't make a deal.
Yeah, and as far as Richard Jefferson goes, that's a very specific scenario that Milwaukee was having to deal with. I know you look at that trade and you say, yeah, the Spurs got Richard Jefferson for, you know, for a song. But when you look at it from Milwaukee's perspective, and I think John Hollinger wrote this, I mean, they weren't necessarily trading Richard Jefferson for Bruce Bowen and Fabrizio Oberto. They were trading Richard Jefferson for the right to re-sign Charlie Villanueva and Ramon Sessions. So if you look at that trade from that prospect and say, would you trade Richard Jefferson for Charlie Villanueva and Ramon Sessions, I think anyone would do that trade. So, I mean, you look at that trade and you're like, yeah, man, they got Richard Jefferson for nothing. But that's a very specific cost-cutting measure that, you know, I mean, you have to be in the right place at the right time to pick up on. And, you know, from the Trailblazers' perspective, do you want to sink, you know, whatever it is, $16 million into Richard Jefferson? They've had that opportunity before. They've turned it down. So, I mean, it's not that deal to me isn't, you know, beyond the pale or anything. It seems like a very legitimate deal that, you know, I think it makes San Antonio, you know, slightly better, but I don't, you know, I don't think it's something that people should point to and say, man, we really should have, you know, got our hands in that, or why can't we make a trade like that? Because it's a, you know, it's a very specific scenario.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, this is San Antonio's last gasp at making a run for the rings. Portland isn't even beginning to be in that situation, and that player and that contract just don't fit Portland's situation, no matter what the name on the back of the jersey says or what the stats have said.
There's lopsided deals to be had.
There are. If you're willing to take back, you know, it's obviously it's a question of utility. Are you willing? Is the player good enough to take back that kind of salary, which is basically what those deals shake down to? And, you know, I don't, looking at the Richard Jefferson trade, I say no. I don't think he would. I mean, if we had the same, if we could have sent, I don't know,
Rafe LaFrance's expiring contract
and one or two guys at the end of the bench to Milwaukee for Richard Jefferson, no, I don't think he'd make that trade, because I think they probably had that option. And I'm sure they worked through it and decided it wasn't what was best for the team. And, I mean, you could argue that it would have been better for him, but, I mean, I think at a certain point you have to question why, you know, Richard Jefferson was on the block for so long. It seemed like they've been trying to trade him for a year and a half, or basically since they got him. And, you know, you have to look around the league and wonder why that is. So, I mean, you know, teams make trades based on their own situations, and it's hard to you know, transfer those situations over to other teams when, you know, they're completely different situations altogether.
How much better do you think Richard Jefferson makes San Antonio? I was saying this morning, I think it catapults them above like Denver and Houston, as long as they stay healthy, but they're still a ways off from, you know, the Lakers. But I will say this, if they stay healthy with Greg Popovich, and, you know, Richard Jefferson's probably going to flourish in that system at age 29, if you ask me. He's what they needed. I guess if things really come together well and the chemistry develops and they spark, and Los Angeles doesn't take that next step, as they, you know, probably won't as a franchise. I think they're pretty peaked out for the quality of play that they're going to perform at for the next couple of years. I think they have the potential maybe to knock off Los Angeles next year in the Western Conference Finals. And I think, you know, as long as they stay healthy, it puts them a clear tick above the other Western contenders. How about you guys?
Well, I mean, you basically answered the question when you talked about health. I think if San Antonio was healthy without Richard Jefferson, they're a, you know, I think they're a contending team. I don't think they get to the top of the mountain, but I think that they're right there in contention with, you know, the top two or three or four teams in the Western Conference. And that's aside from Richard Jefferson. So, I mean, from my perspective, if, you know, if Ginobili and Duncan and Tony Parker, if they're all healthy for, you know, the majority of the season, which is a big if, they're a good team regardless. Adding Richard Jefferson to that, I mean, if one of those guys goes down, I don't think having Richard Jefferson there really fills that void. I mean, I don't think Richard Jefferson and Manu Ginobili are equal in talent. I know that Richard Jefferson and Tim Duncan and Tony Parker aren't talent equal. So, you know, at a certain point, I look at that trade and I look at that roster as it's constructed, and I say, you know, if they make it through the season with everyone intact, they're already a good team. Adding Richard Jefferson, while it makes them a slightly better team if they are healthy, if they're not healthy, they're still not going to make it. They're still going to get bounced in the first round. So, I mean, if you're San Antonio, you really cross your fingers and hope that everyone stays healthy. And like Dave said, you know, if they can, with the addition of Richard Jefferson, I think they still have Drew Gooden from last season, who's a decent player. Then yeah, I think you look at your roster and you look at Popovich and you look at all the experience they have, and you say, you know, this is a decent team, and this is a team that could contend. But without health, Richard Jefferson doesn't mean a damn, if you ask me.
Yeah, he's their fourth best player right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think it's a significant drop off from Ginobili to.
Oh, it's not that bad, man.
What's Richard Jefferson done? That's the thing.
Been
people
in two
have
finals.
This,
I mean, he was the third best player on a team that went back to back to the finals.
It's obvious
you're not a big Richard Jefferson
believer. I'm not. I'm absolutely not. And I think that the numbers bear that out.
I mean, he's a good defender. He's a good rebounder. He's not going to be asked to shoot. But when he's left wide open from three, you can count on him in the upper 30s, 38% from three. I'd imagine that's what he'll shoot in San Antonio. And he's not going to have to expend energy attacking the defense on offense. I mean, I think Richard Jefferson's going to have quite an impact on San Antonio. He'll be able to focus on rebounding and defense and being a team player, which is really what, you know, he was coming out of college after 3 years at Arizona. How much better do you think they make him, Dave?
I think they're going to have to run a little more to take full advantage of him, frankly. I've never been that impressed with his half-court game. I think it's developed since he got injured. But, you know, I'm kind of up in the air about this one. I think it's a good move for them. I think it's exactly what they need to try in that sense. I think it's brilliant. Is this going to make them automatic championship contenders? I think that remains to be seen. It remains to be seen how he fits. And, you know, frankly, for a guy with as much talent as he's had, he's been to an awful lot of teams. And he didn't work out really well with the Olympic squad. You know, teams tend to keep him for a couple years and then move him. You know, there's something there that's not quite on. So it'll be interesting to see how the San Antonio environment shapes that. Maybe they reform him into something that's a usable tool and just is perfect. I mean, a great coaching system and a great team can often convert players like that. On the other hand, maybe it's kind of falling apart there for him, and they're making, you know, a last grab at this, and it doesn't turn out really well. That's frankly what happens most of the time when you see teams start acquiring veterans like, you know, Gooden and like Jefferson to lengthen their window a little bit longer. Usually doesn't work.
I just want to say, too, that I agree. I think it's a good trade because they don't really give up that much. I just don't think it makes them, you know, all that much better.
Where do you think they finish in the standings? If you had to rate it next year, I'll put L.A. on top with about, they're going to dip a little bit. A little post-championship malaise, probably kicking into cruise control with Phil Jackson there. I'll put L.A. on top with like maybe 59 wins or 60 wins in San Antonio. If they stay healthy, 57 or 58. And then, you know, Denver and Houston in the mid-50s there. And you know, that's not including what – I mean, Portland right now to me is it has the resources – and if they make the right trades, they could win the West. I don't think there's any insurmountable challenge in the West right now as it looks.
Yeah,
it was so tight last year that, I mean, it's on paper you look at it and you say, well, Richard Jefferson add three more wins to that team? In that case, they finished second in the West, you know. But will this year be the same as last year is one of the questions. But it's so tight in there that any move has the potential, I think, to put someone up snuggling close to the Lakers. So, yeah, I mean, they took their shot. I think they have a legitimate chance to finish at least second in the West.
If you're a random team out there, let's switch topics here real quick. If you're just a random team out there and you're at number two, you don't have any great answer at point guard, you don't have any great answer at center. Are you taking Ricky Rubio tomorrow night or are you taking Hasheem Thabeet?
I would take Rubio. I think I just think that he's a better option at that position, you know. And I don't know. I think with Rubio, you know that if nothing else, you're getting a guy who loves to play basketball. With Thabeet, I don't know that you can say the same thing. I mean, you're getting a guy who's got, you know, great physical tools, but you know, does he really love playing basketball? Is he playing basketball for the right reasons? In Rubio, you got a guy who's been playing pro ball since he was 13 or 14. You know that's his love and his passion. Whether or not he turns into, you know, an all-star point guard, I think that's really up in the air. But I think you look at Thabeet, and I think his ceiling is maybe, you know, a two-time all-star. You know, I don't really see it out of that guy that he's going to hopefully give you a nice defensive presence in the middle. But I don't know that you can ever expect a whole lot more out of him than that.
I think overall center outweighs point guard, but when the talent disparity is what I see, you know, Hasheem Thabeet after last year wasn't anywhere close to a lottery pick. In some of the drafts, he'd probably still be top 10, but he's not like a marquee talent. He's going to be a defending, rebounding, I would say, Samuel Dalembert.
Yeah.
You know, and Samuel Dalembert isn't putting any team on his back and, you know, playing defense and rebounding the way to an NBA championship. I agree with you. I would take Rubio. How about you, Dave?
First of all, I curse the heavens that I got the number two pick this year as opposed to other years. Second, I try to see if there's a team out there with stars in their eyes who's going to give me a, you know, near star level player to move up to number two. If I can't do either of those things, I figure if, since I got the number two pick, I got to go big or go home and take a risk. And I think that's the risk is probably Rubio, that he probably has the ability to develop into something special more than Tabit does. That's not saying he's going to. I think there's also probably that he just flops. But you got to take that chance with number two. You can't play it safe because, you know, if you miss out on, you know, if the guy becomes a bust and you picked him number two, that's kind of a black mark on you. But if a guy becomes a superstar and you didn't pick him number two, that lives with you forever.
Yeah. You know, it brings up a good point, though, that, you know, you have Andrew Bynum in Los Angeles and Yao in Houston, Dwight Howard in Orlando, and then, of course, Greg Oden here in Portland. But I think teams are starting to look at that as part of their strategy as to how you're going to compete well into the 21st century and really the next decade in the NBA. You're going to at least need a big man that can bring the physical tools to the game that Casey talked about and rebound and defend against Yao, Andrew, Greg, and Dwight.
Yeah, the thing about the beat, though, is he's not that – I mean, he's a tall presence, but he's not that big physical presence that those other guys you mentioned are. So, I mean, does the beat help you against Dwight Howard, you know, or against Bynum? I'm not going to talk about Greg until, you know, we see a little more out of him. But, I mean, does he help you against those guys? I don't know. I mean, at first glance, I would say no. But especially with the way that he seemed to get, you know, abused by more physical players in the post.
Oh, Blair killed him.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, if, you know, if that's what what you can expect out of him, then, yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, you take him if you think he's the best player. But I don't think you necessarily look at him and say, well, you know, now we have an answer for Dwight Howard or now we have an answer for Yao, because I don't think anyone's really convincing himself that's the case at this point.
Dave, out of all the lottery picks, you'd have to see Hasheem Thabeet most likely to bust, you think?
Yeah, it's tough. I think Rubio has a decent chance of busting as well, and not because he doesn't have the skills, but because he doesn't necessarily have the body. And one of the main questions in this draft actually is going to be, how much can people bulk up? And that's up and down the draft board. I mean, Darren Collison, who the Blazers might be selecting if they are at number 24, same question. It's, you know, it's just a potluck. This is a terrible, terrible draft for that. What you want when you draft, you want a little bit of uncertainty and a ton of promise. And what you have right now is a little bit of promise and a ton of uncertainty.
Sounds like a song.
Yeah, this draft is terrible. Man, it is, whew. Yeah, I'm glad that we don't have a high pick in this draft. Though I will say here that I'm reading that Mark Spears of the Boston Globe says that Portland and Phoenix are interested in trading for one of Minnesota's two picks in the top 10. So
yeah, well, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, the first thing I thought when I saw Minnesota acquire those is there's a pick at the top of this draft or in the mid-round that's moving. And Portland could well be a player in that. And the question is, which guy are they going after at what level?
Out of the lottery picks you see, I mean, it's got to be Stephen Curry, right? If you see the Blazers late tomorrow morning or early in the afternoon, you know, it flashes up and you get breaking news that they're moving into the top 10. It's, you got to believe that they're targeting Curry. Is there any other player? You know, I bump around and I've seen most of these players play in college, or you know, you read about them and you find out quickly that they're not Portland Trailblazers by, you know, things like, you know, Tyreek Evans. Well, he's not the most coachable guy. Boom, gone. There's no way the Blazers are taking him, right? But he, for other teams, like, they're considering him in the top five. I don't see anybody else that combines the talent and the personality and the resume beyond Steph Curry that would really make sense as a Portland Trailblazer.
Yeah, I think there's...
It could be Rubio if he slips. I mean, I think that might be a legitimate pick for Portland because... they, you know, I personally wouldn't like it, but you can see where they're going. Hey, you know, potential starting point guard, potential synergy with Rudy, good, you know, passer and really quick and stood out in those Olympic games. You know, I wouldn't be horribly surprised if that's the guy they were going after. The thing is, I don't think we'll get the trade announced beforehand. I think there'll have to be a player there first, and I think Minnesota will probably pick him before we know what the Blazers are doing.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that that pick will be made by someone else, and then it'll be moved, which I think that is the part where it can't happen until days away, but I'll have to brush up on all the stuff before tomorrow. But as far as who they would be targeting, I think there's probably four or five guys, if they moved into that five or six spot, that they would consider. I think they'll all be point guards because that's where the talent is in this draft. But I mean, looking at the list, and who knows who to say these guys would be available, but I think guys like Johnny Flynn, Ricky Rubio, Stephen Curry, Drew Holiday, I think all those guys are potentials. I mean, because I think they're all, you know, high ceiling point guards that, you know, might not have reached, you know, their apex yet, or they, in fact, they haven't, and they're still in some ways, you know, unknown quantities. But I think that there's talent there, and there's physical tools there that, I mean, any team could use. I think especially when you look at a guy like Johnny Flynn or Drew Holiday, you know, you have bigger point guards, or at least physical wise, who, you know, can probably play off the ball a little bit with Brandon Roy. And I think that's, you know, that's something that they probably value at this point when they look at their roster.
If the Blazers come up with Rubio or Drew Holiday, who is what just played 1 year at UCLA, how do you imagine Nate McMillan reacting to that? If you know, because going into this draft, they could, you know, they could decide to trade for a veteran, they could pick a young player, but if they end up with the youngest of the potentially young, you know, Nate McMillan hasn't negotiated a new contract. That was a story last summer. I got to believe that, you know, he's waiting to see how all of this plays out just as much as everybody else is in the decision that he's going to make. He's done a hell of a job coaching this team up, and for their average age to get to 54 wins last year, almost unprecedented in the history of the NBA, what he was able to do. I'd be wanting some help, and I don't know, though. Nate's a Northwest guy at this point. Would you leave just because the team wants to take a long-term approach? I don't think so. Nate's a different guy, though. That's what people tell me.
I don't think he would either. I think, you know, if it's a guy with talent that Nate McMillan likes, I think he's, you know, he's probably not going to be stoked if he's 19 or 20 years old. But, I mean, you know, I think Nate McMillan knows that, you know, we're probably not going to win a championship next year. So, if you know, if you got this guy for, you know, if you can let it bake for two or three more years, or hopefully two, and then have a real, you know, chance, then, you know, I think he goes with it. And yeah, I don't think Nate McMillan is leaving because he doesn't get another veteran. You know, I think if it ever comes to the point where he's considering moving on, it'll be because another team is offering him, you know, a nice position. Now, I don't know how many other teams there are in the NBA who are in as good a position as the Trailblazers are right now. But I mean, there's a couple out there for sure. So I think it's very unlikely to see Nate McMillan go anywhere anytime soon. But two, if it were to happen, I don't think, you know, drafting a 19-year-old point guard would be the breaking point. I know he wants more veterans. I'm sure Kevin Pritchard wants more veterans too. But when it comes down to it, you got to go for talent. And Nate McMillan's smart enough to know that.
Yeah, it won't just be Nate. Personally, I'll be quite disappointed if we draft a project point guard and don't get some other veteran point guard help who can produce a little bit more and play a little bit more multifaceted of a game. That's not to say I don't love Steve Blake. I do. But I don't think you go into the fall with this team with Steve Blake and two complete unknowns again behind him. You either have to improve your starter so that he's going to be able to fill more minutes more consistently in more situations, or you have to improve the bench behind him and get more reliability and veteran presence there. So if we go for a Rubio or something like that, I'm going to be climbing the walls if we don't also get an upgrade somewhere else in the point guard chain.
Okay, I think I'm good on that. I totally agree. I suppose it's okay. I guess because, you know, we tend to evaluate what the Blazers are going to do in the context of one move, but there's probably going to be two or three, right? I would anticipate.
That seems likely.
You're going to draft somebody, or you're going to move up in the draft, plus you're going to sign a player to back up at four and probably add some depth to your backcourt, I would think. So I think three things will probably happen here over the next 2 weeks. And as long as the majority of them involve players that are veterans in the league, I'm happy. It's crazy. We keep hearing these names, guys. It was David Lee over the weekend. It was Hedo Turkoglu over the weekend. But I got to tell you, the veteran name that I keep coming back to that makes the most sense because of what Chicago's motivation would be, it's Kirk Heinrich. And I guess Detroit's threatening to throw a wrench in the plans with their overtures towards Ben Gordon and starting him out with a contract at $11 million, which is a topic for another day, which is a crazy figure to start Ben Gordon at. But if they do that, then maybe Chicago decides to hold on to Kirk Heinrich. But Kirk's the name I keep coming back to. as the most likely player that's been discussed and debated and speculated upon to be a Portland Trailblazer next year. How about you?
I think it's most likely of all those players just because of the situation they're in. They have a point guard. They're set for the next 10 years a point guard with Derrick Rose. He makes a reasonable salary. It seems to fit in well with what the Trailblazers need out of a point guard, someone who can play off the ball, who could also run the offense, run the pick and roll when necessary. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I don't necessarily think it's going to happen, but I think if you're looking at guys out there who are available who the Trailblazers would have interest in, I think that Heinrich is probably around the top of that list, if for no other reason than he is attainable, or at least seemingly attainable at this point.
Yeah, Kirk's gone. I mean, that's an awful, awful contract for the Bulls at this point. Looks reasonable to other teams like the Blazers, which is part of why he'll be traded. The question is, do the Blazers value his defense and his presence enough to make that move and commit that salary to him? And I believe in the situation that they're in right now, I believe the answer to that is yes. And I believe that Heinrich would kind of settle down that rotation no matter who you have behind him, because he can play, 36 minutes a game without hurting you in multiple situations. And, that's basically what the Blazers need. They don't need an all-star point guard. They just need someone who's going to do a few more things than Blake does.
See, I want to throw one thing out here, too. If we're still on topic of Heinrich, I can wait for a second. But just reading over these rumors, and since we're talking about point guards, the fact that supposedly Boston is shopping Rajon Rondo?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what? I mean, that doesn't...
Yeah, although, did you see that? I mean, come on, the offer apparently that's being based on, at least last I read, was their offer to Detroit for what, Prince and Hamilton and Stuckey, which is like, me saying I'll trade you, I'll trade you Labor Day for Christmas. It's like, okay, both are nice holidays, but come on, you're not going to trade those three players from Detroit for what Boston was offering. So it was almost like a joke or something like that.
Well, Boston Globe is also saying too that a different trade is Mike Conley and Rudy Gay from Memphis for Rondo and Scalabrine.
Yeah, so that's a lot, too. I mean, come on, Rudy Gay's, he may be redundant in Memphis a little bit now with, Mayo and...
And Darius.
Darius, exactly. But, or a little more redundant than he was. But that's still a huge, huge payoff for Rondo.
Yeah, I've heard that... Coach Doc Rivers doesn't like Rondo, and he's not the most easy guy to coach. He's going at 110 miles an hour in a league where everybody else is going about 75 or 80. And if you don't keep up with him on the fast break, he'll just run away from his teammates and really start to do his own thing and really start to improvise plays. He rubbed Doc Rivers the wrong way. He rubs a lot of people the wrong way with his with his brashness. I mean, he's young, he's confident. I mean, for the guy is just he's an incredible athlete. He's probably the most athletic point guard out there. When you talk about ability to defend and his quickness, well, I don't know if maybe him and Tony Parker in a race with the ball, it'd be very interesting to see who would win that. But I still don't think that's enough to move him. But they would if they could get Detroit or Memphis to bite. I think on a lopsided deal. But I think what Doc Rivers is going to find out next year, once you get your leader Kevin Garnett back in that locker room, he'll start to take over the team. And I just don't know how you could break up what was a championship chemistry. And and Boston for the first 20 games, they looked like the best team in the NBA once again. Ran out of gas and they got dinged up a little bit. But man, I don't see how, even if you have the biggest dick in the history of the league on your team, that you trade him just because of, coachability issues. Well, apparently he was coachable enough to win a title with. So I don't but if Rondo is available, I tell you what, even if he does march to the beat of his own drummer, I would love to see the Blazers make an offer for him.
Yeah.
Incredible talent.
Absolutely.
I think that could happen. If he's available, I think that they'd be at least making phone calls. But Rondo right now feels like My Fair Lady. He's been dressed up. He used to be kind of an ugly duckling. He's now looking really good, and it feels like the Celtics are going to try to move him for someone who always was a supermodel. And you always worry if, you know, when he gets traded, if the makeup is going to come off and the whatevers are going to fall out. And then, you know, you're looking at a good player, but not one who's as productive or as good of a fit as he was with Garnett in Boston.
What are the whatevers, Dave? What were you talking about with the whatevers?
If I have to explain that to you, Gavin, then it's going to take longer than we have on the podcast.
Well, he's talking about headbands. Rajon Rondo always wears a headband, and you can't wear a headband in Portland. So.
Headbands, yeah, that's right.
Very good. So you're going to Spain, huh?
Going to Spain and to France. Coming up soon.
You're pretty stoked.
Well, I'm stoked now that everything seems to actually be coming into place. Up until a few days ago, I hadn't heard back definitively from a couple of the players who I'm supposedly visiting, and, you know, Europe is a fairly large place, and it's hard to track guys down. So, but it seems like now things are really locking in. Leave Saturday, get to Mallorca on Sunday, and hopefully hit the ground running. There'll be lots of stuff to check out on Trailblazers.com. I don't know if, like I said, I wanted to check in with you guys if necessary or if you want that. I'll also be meeting up with Sergio, too. So if something happens with Sergio, you know,
that'd be great.
Be able to get some firsthand discussions of it and, you know, and then meeting up with Nick after that to finish it off. So I think, you know, I think it's going to be cool. I don't, like I said last week, I don't know that, you know, any other team has really tried to do anything like this before. And hopefully, you know, it won't be a complete and total failure. And hopefully it'll actually be something that people will enjoy and, you know, maybe something we'll make consistent.
So when does this start?
It starts Sunday. Yeah. I leave Saturday. So it's draft on Thursday, Friday off, on a plane Saturday morning.
Boom. Yeah, out of here.
Wow. Gone.
Mallorca? Would you have loved to have been in that pitch meeting, Gavin?
Yeah.
Casey goes into the office and says, I have an idea.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
Going to Europe, to the beaches, to the nightlife. Oh, I mean to interview players.
It was really more just a conversation I had in the hallway with Sherry Hansen. You know, we were talking about the budget, and I was like, you know, I don't know if, you know, traveling during the season, you know, how that's going to shake out. But, you know, it might be nice to, you know, maybe do some stuff in the off season where there aren't as many stories out. And, you know, we're kind of hurting for content during that prime year. She's like, yeah, we'll think about that. And then, you know, it just kind of went off from there. There was never, you know, I didn't like go into a boardroom with like 10 people sitting around a table and be like, all right, here's the story. I'm going to go to Mallorca and yeah, I'm going to hang out on the beach and eat tapas and, you know, hang out with beautiful women and so on and so forth. It was more just, yeah, you know,
you know what's really cool is Spain's soccer team is on a 35-match winning streak. They play the USA today at 11:30. And if they win this, they'll set the all-time record for consecutive wins internationally, besting Brazil by a game if they beat the U.S., which they will today. But the point being, this is the round of 16. The round of 8 is this weekend, and then midweek next week. I tell you what, this isn't as big as the World Cup, but it's a big international competition, and that country is going to be going wild with football mania. Yeah. I'm quite jealous of you.
Now, so the U.S. made it through to that? I thought, didn't they have to like score 3 goals, and then someone else had to lose by? It happened.
Yeah, it was an incredible Sunday in the Dawson household as we watched the Americans. We watched Brazil go up 3-0 on Italy. That needed to happen, 3-0.
Right.
There needed to be a 6-goal swing for the U.S. in the differential. And then, yeah, they got 2 goals, I believe, in the 60th and like the 70th minute against Egypt. So, yeah, they advanced even though they only won one game in their group.
So whose place did they take?
I believe they snuck past Italy.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe Sergio or Rudy can get you tickets. That would be cool.
Wow.
But all I know is that Quick went to Mississippi to interview Outlaws. So, I mean, you're definitely a step above that.
Second straight year. He had a nice series on Outlaw last year. And I thought, it was almost indicative as like the watershed moment where Outlaw went from being a really shy kid to being a little bit more visible for the fans. I don't know if that piece had anything to do with his comfortability factor, but I enjoyed, watching Outlaw, and he seems to be coming into himself socially outside of his own inner circle a lot more.
Absolutely.
Is that accurate?
I think so. The only thing about that is that piece, I think that he kind of felt like he was – like he kind of took some knocks from fans for saying that, you know, he wanted the ball, or, you know, he wanted to take shots, or, you know, I think he made some kind of comment about, you know, Carmelo shouldn't complain because he's getting 40 shots a game or something like that. And I think people read that and they're like, oh, Travis is making all these demands. He wants shots and he wants time, you know? And,
yeah, he predicted he's going to be an all-star or something.
Yeah. Well, and the thing, I had talked to Travis about it later on. He's like, you know, 90% of the stuff that I say is a joke. So, you know, when you read it in a newspaper, it doesn't necessarily sound like a joke. But when I'm talking to someone, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, I'm, you know, making fun. And he's one of those guys, too, where he'll keep a straight face for, you know, like 4 days about a joke, you know, and he'll just keep running it on and on and on and until finally you get out of him what the truth is. So, and I think he kind of felt like he was maybe unfairly judged from that piece. But I agree. This year, Travis was more, you know, he was more out there. And I don't know if it had anything to do with that. Maybe it did. Maybe it just, you know, he's the kind of guy that takes 6 years to get comfortable in the place he's at. I don't know. But I agree completely with you. I think that we did see a change in Travis this year. And it was nice.
So we're depending on this trip to perk up Sergio and Rudy and Nick, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot on your shoulders.
I'm going to change all their personalities for the better. So media out there, I expect some serious kudos and maybe a few payments here and there for improving all the chances. Either that or I'll go over there and make them hate media more than they've ever hated anything before in their lives, and then everyone will hate on me for it. So,
wow, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, that would be awesome. You got me to blame, Portland media, if next year you come into training camp and no one wants to talk to you anymore. So
yeah.
Well, you know, all know that the key unsung factor in any team is its bloggers.
Yeah,
so.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I'm really kind of the linchpin when it comes to, you know, how this whole thing shakes out. Championships and media relations and, you know, referees. It all comes down to basically what people see on the website. So it's
Dave,
a lot on me.
What's cracking at Blazer's Edge? I saw a mock draft, I believe, this morning. What else you got in store?
Well, we are going to cover the draft live tomorrow, of course. So we're all waiting like everybody else to see what the moves are. We will be analyzing picks or non-picks, as the case may be. And we'll roll into the prospects of the free agent season coming up. And then, of course, it's Summer League.
Twitter.com/Blazers Edge. I see Ben banging out those tweets constantly.
Ben is tweet man number one, I think. He probably of almost any other, at least NBA blogger out there. Ben does a great job with that. You know, obviously, a lot of people will just throw up links to their stuff and not anything else. But Ben really peppers in a lot of, you know, stuff from the PF. And also, you know, he keeps conversations going with people, which is what Twitter is really all about. So Ben is really using it the right way, and I take my hat off to him.
Do I see you on there?
I am PDX Trailblazers along with a few other people in the office. You know, I don't put as much or really any personal stuff in there because, you know, I don't really feel like that's my purview to do. But, I mean, the stuff you see from the PDX Trailblazers official Twitter feed is it's usually me. So.
There's like eight of them that say Trailblazers, so I was wondering who the hell – yeah.
PDX Trailblazers, everyone out there, if you're unaware, that is the only official Trailblazers Twitter feed. The other ones out there, you know, if we wanted to be jerks, we could probably do something about. But we figure, you know, more information, the better. So
it's all good.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, how about you, Dave? Are you doing that?
Tweeting?
Yeah.
I'm an old guy. I don't understand any of that newfangled stuff, so – I mostly keep it on the blog.
Okay. Well, you can follow me. But I, you know what? I don't really tweet that much. I just love the stream of info and updates from other writers, bloggers, and athletes. It's great theater just to sit there and watch the world go by from their eyes, kind of.
It is kind of cool. But you know what? I think I'm kind of joking about being old. I'm not that old. But
yeah, you are.
I feel a little grizzled in terms of the off season wears on me a little bit in terms of jumping at this and that. You know, every little piece of data gets magnified, and when you've seen enough of them, you start to roll your eyes a little bit. I'm not saying I'm disenchanted, but instant access to absolutely everything that goes on everywhere in the world is a mixed blessing.
Yeah,
put it that way.
I was following an Iranian student this morning, Persian Kiwi. It's a great follow. Anyway, this student is tweeting from the protests and the demonstrations in Iran. It was quite compelling, actually. Found myself locked in at the break waiting for the next one.
Yeah, Twitter is one of the only ways that, you know, people in Iran, I've read, at least have the ability to get their information out there because there's so much, you know, censorship and such. So in that regard, yeah, that instant information is great. But I do agree with Dave, too, that, you know, when all this information gets reported, and I'm using air quotes around information because, you know, it could just be
misinformation.
Fake. Yeah. I mean, it does get a little much at times.
Hmm. Well,
yeah, I mean, the Iran stuff is fantastic. That's a great use. I mean, what Devin Harris had for breakfast this morning, not so key to my life.
Yeah. Are you going to wake up early tomorrow, get a nice healthy breakfast before you and Ben do a tag team Blazers Edge NBA draft day guest appearance on the MSP?
Absolutely. Awesome. You know, I'm always in shape for you.
Wheaties and whatnot. What do you do for breakfast, Dave? I would imagine I'm going to say toast and Eggos, grapefruit.
You're
eggs.
Close.
Bacon.
And you know we've scraped the bottom of the podcast barrel now when we're talking about this.
Yeah.
But
well, I was interested in what you had for breakfast. Actually, I am quite. I don't know what it is. I the mundane things in people's lives. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I'm a nothing for breakfast, go running for lunch kind of guy.
Wow.
So that's what I do.
That's how you keep that girlish figure.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Well, yeah, that's going to be tomorrow. I'm trying for the 8 o'clock hour. So Dave and Ben. BlazersEdge.com tomorrow on the MSP, 95.5thegame.com, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. or podcasted at any time. For Casey and Dave, I'm Gavin Dawson. We'll be back next week to break. No, we won't because you'll be in Spain.
I will be gone, yeah.
We'll be back in 2 weeks to break it down here on TrailBlazers.com.